A quick note, at Focus Corp, we don't just do retained executive search, but we also place interim finance and accounting professionals. If your team's down a headcount, or covering a long leave, or you're tackling a special project, or you're just slammed, we can get experienced bilingual talent to you fast. Reach out. My contact details are in the show notes. Now, on to our show. Hi, it's Dave Sweet, founder and CEO of Focus Corp. Thanks for listening to the Focus Corp podcast. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that the Focus Corp 2025 salary guide has been released. We're there with some great insights, not only for information about salaries in Japan, but insights about job market, hiring, and what's important to both companies and individuals looking for a job specifically in Japan. There's a link for that in the show notes. Please take a look. And now on to our program.
We always see that there is a lot of nuanced work that needs to happen in this particular market. You know, LinkedIn is not the tool where candidates like to be. And, you know, candidates like to be cajoled. You know, they have to believe that if they're going to join this company, it makes sense for them, maybe not for another lifetime, but for a good number of years. And that means that the approach has to be process much more relationship orientated and build that relationship slowly.
Welcome to the Focus Corp podcast, where we help you focus on your core business by diving into leadership, talent, and the evolving world of recruitment in Asia. Today, we're joined by Roop Kayesta, head of Asia Pacific at AMS. I'm very excited about having Roop on the program. She is a seasoned expert in talent acquisition, in recruitment technology and business strategy. With nearly two decades of experience across the region, Roop has led transformational recruitment initiatives for global organizations and helped shape the future of hiring. Today, I'm excited to discuss with her the evolving talent landscape, how organizations can stay ahead in a competitive market, especially here in Japan, and what the future of recruitment holds for Asia. So with that, let's dive in. Welcome, Roop. So welcome to Focus Corp podcast, Roop. It's a delight to see you today.
Thank you, David. It is a pleasure to be with you. You know, when we met in Singapore, feels like forever back, but the last few weeks back, and we spoke about this, you know how passionate I am about sharing everything that I know and do about talent acquisition in the market. So really, really looking forward to this conversation.
Well, thank you. And, you know, you have such a wonderful career. You've got two decades of talent acquisition with some wonderful companies. You're right now involved as the regional managing director at AMS. Maybe for the people that don't know, you'd be helpful to kind of share with us your career path and how you've gotten to where you're at now.
Sure. I think I have to start where I started. I actually started my working professional career as a medical representative. So I used to work for a pharmaceutical company. After my bachelor's, went on to work there for a couple of years in business administration, specializing in finance, not doing anything like that anymore. But it was a great foundation, I have to say. And then I worked with a bank. I worked with ING for a couple of years. All of this was in India, which is where I am originally from. And then in 2006, we moved to Southeast Asia, to Malaysia, Kuala Lumpur, and that's where my recruitment career started. I worked for a company called Randstad for almost 18 years and lived and worked in Kuala Lumpur, Singapore, and Hong Kong as well. And worked through various different roles. I think I grew up as a recruiter, but then very quickly I moved into the outsourcing space. When I was heading our business in Hong Kong, that was the thing. We were coming out of the financial crisis, and recruitment process outsourcing, or RPO, what we call, was sort of the in thing. And I joined that business. I've never looked back. I joined AMS almost 3 years back as the regional head of our Asia Pacific business. So I'm responsible for all our regions and our clients across Asia Pacific. That is everything from India to New Zealand. I am really passionate about talent acquisition as a function. I'm really passionate about tech-enabled talent acquisition as a function. And for me, I think what that means is, given I'm a recruiter at heart, it's not just about the client experience, the hiring manager experience, but equally important is the candidate experience and the recruiter experience in everything I do and talk about, write about, and want to influence. You will see that come up.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to chatting about all of that. And let's start with you as a leader, though, because you're such an exceptional leader in this space. What has been kind of your defining moments in your career that shaped your leadership style?
Yeah, I think a few of those I'll go back to and draw upon. I was a very early manager. I say, I was leading a big team of sort of sales representatives in a bank at ING when I was just about 27. So that sort of taught me something that I think really honed in on, which is around situational leadership, because in that team, very, very early in my career, I had graduates who were, looking, and I also had 40 plus year olds that felt that they knew everything about banking, but they were sort of needed to be managed still. I think that was one key moment of learning and really establishing sort of where I am today as a leader. I think leadership is about driving a team to being high performing, and that happens when we get the best out of people. And I feel like, my learnings throughout, but that particular situation, you can imagine it was a new branch in a bank, ING, not very well known in the retail banking space in India. And we had a huge sales target. I was, really, really fresh out of my management training course and wanted to make an influence. And, I was very, very hands-on that time as a leader, leading this team of sort of 30 execs, like I said. So that was a big moment for me. Probably the second one was in Hong Kong, just in between of the financial crisis, really. And I used to work for a company that Randstad acquired, and we were consolidating businesses. They had multiple brands in that market, and as a part of consolidation, they felt that this business, which was literally, we were three people doing exec search in Hong Kong at that time, really didn't wasn't going anywhere. And Randstad, being the big gorilla that it is, I said, okay, let's see, do we really need this business? Don't need that need this business. And at that time, I presented to the board member of the new Randstad and made a business case on why they should keep the Hong Kong business, really aligning with the business that we had in the pipeline, but also the importance of Hong Kong as a market, as a business, almost as a gateway to China, which went really, really well. And I know that's one of the businesses that's doing extremely well. I have nothing to do with that business anymore, but it still makes me really proud. And it was, from a leadership perspective, it was also a defining moment, because I had this team of three extremely hungry, extremely knowledgeable recruiters. And, we were in a time of not when people were recruiting. And, we were able to turn that around together. When I left Hong Kong, that business was about 30 people strong, and I know it's touching about 100 now. So I think I feel like that really gave me the confidence that I can take on not just leadership of people, but also leadership at an executive level with the board, and really, making sure that there's a business impact as well. And I think probably through the last couple of years, through COVID, again, I would say a lot of defining moments, but what I have become now is what I say is, I am a situational leader. I am not the same leader for each one of my members, team members. I'm not the same leader for each one of the various countries that are at, various stages of development, and their own life cycle. And I feel like that is a strength that I carry for the organization, as well as being a leader in Asia Pacific, because, as you know, David, and we've spoken about this, right? A leader using the same tools in India versus Japan might not get the same results. And that's why, I really go back to that situational leadership as being something that I feel I've really done well in that. I'm a lifelong learner, so I wouldn't say I've perfected it yet. I continue to learn, but I think that's a big part of who I am today.
Isn't it all? Yeah, that's very inspirational. I really like the Hong Kong story. I didn't know that. That was good. I think it's for listeners who may not know AMS, I think it's, I mean, AMS delivers a certain solution to companies, and I think it's important for everybody to understand what they do, because I think recruitment in globally is so challenging. So it's nice to understand really what it is that you do and how you kind of help companies in
Yeah.
APAC.
Just at a very high level, AMS's vision is to make the vision of our clients work. And what that really means is today, like you rightly said, recruitment, talent acquisition is quite complex. It's quite strategic, actually, particularly coming out of the pandemic, the chief HR officers and the chief talent officers actually are the favorite people for the CEOs. And the reason for that is the company might have the best strategy, they might have the best products, but if they don't have the talent to deliver that, all of that doesn't work. And talent, skills, people are finally on the board table as well as discussion points. What AMS does is we are a purely outsourcing company, and what we do is we don't do recruitment at a transactional level. We do really enterprise level outsourcing. So, and interestingly, RPO as a term, or recruitment process outsourcing as a term, was started by our chairperson and founder about 28 years back, where, that was sort of the advent of this outsourcing. Because previously, companies used to do what you call turnkey recruitment. Staffing companies would do that, where they take a project and then they deliver that project. Whereas what we do is we really look at what is the problem that we're trying to solve for our clients. What is it that they want to deliver for their business? And we support our clients to deliver that. That's why I say we deliver people that enable our clients to deliver their vision. And for a pharmaceutical company, that could mean that they need to launch a cancer drug in a span of 6 to 9 months in a particular market. And we provide the people for doing that. We provide the strategy for doing that. We also help the client, this pharmaceutical company, for example, to ensure that they have the right brand to be able to attract the right talent. So it's really looking at talent holistically, and not just talent acquisition, but also talent management. We now also deliver, together with our clients, we deliver a skill-based strategy to our clients as well. And what that means is it has to be the best person for the best job or the best skill, rather than it being an external hire, an internal hire, or referral, or sometimes skilling an individual that exists in the organization. That is kind of how we approach talent as a whole,
That's great.
and that's our business.
Yeah, I mean, AMS is kind of the gold standard for RPO, I think. I think there's a lot of companies that try to do RPO and flounder at it poorly and kind of give a shoddy name to it. They just kind of stick a recruiter in and hope for the best. Where what we're talking about is going in, putting in a solution, going in and putting in processes. And I'd like to hear more about, because you guys do a lot with technology, with analytics, which I wholeheartedly think is, if you're going to go this route, you definitely need to go and do it correctly, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, for many years now, but all the more, now with the advent of AI, we have been a technology-enabled business. And what that means is, because I'll take a pause and tell you a little bit about the history of AMS, where we started RPO. And this is very well known. Typically, companies that tend to outsource starts with the financial services, then it goes to the pharmaceutical companies, and then it's the tech companies, the retail, the hospitality, those kind of industries sort of follow through. But given that some of our first few clients were banking, financial services, highly regulated sort of environment, we set up a business that is quite tech enabled, so that there is no two ways. There is a single point of truth as we are, recording, measuring, and analyzing things. So really, technology is a part of our DNA. That's how we do business. We have also evolved our technology over the years, and we now have sort of what we call an operating system called AMS One, which is purely and purely for our people that work on our clients. But then we also adapt that to our clients' technology. So that's a big part of what we do. And, data is something that is so key as we look for the right talent for our clients. Because, like I said, it's not about this is the best candidate. It has to be the best candidate, right? And it does not matter where that candidate comes from, whether they come from an exec search company or they come from an internal database or that's sourced by the RPO. It could be an internal candidate or it could be an internal candidate that is only 80% right for that role and the 20% upskilling needs to happen. So we look at all of that as a whole, and we use technology to make those decisions. We also use technology to show to the hiring managers why and how they can make the right decision. Apart from that, I think, like you and I, we were talking earlier as well, recruitment and talent acquisition can be quite a confusing space because, I mean, the flip side of the technology is that technology availability is also to the hiring manager community. And people would always think about, oh, I can be an expert by doing a search on LinkedIn, for example. And we use technology to kind of really show a holistic picture, whether it's for a role or a market or, trends in a particular industry. And that is how our talent advisors, our recruiters, and our managers make sure that we are bringing the right service and the best talent for our clients.
That's great. I get the image of, you get the old parable of, the blind people going in and touching different parts of the elephant, and you get the trunk and you get the leg, and no one knows that it's. And I get the really, you guys really go in and show the whole elephant. I mean, so that companies know they're making the right decision. And it takes a lot of effort and systems to be able to do that, which I think is fantastic. What, from your point of view, should companies be aware of, or expect or avoid when they're taking a look at the RPO model for them and to find out if it's right for them?
Yeah, sure. I think it's really important, first of all, if companies have an internal TA team or whatever TA system that they have that's working, that's great, right? They may or may not, they may be already working with an RPO or not. But for companies who really want to be trailblazers, for companies who want to constantly, evolve themselves, it would be worthwhile for them to think about a couple of things. Number one, how is their business needs changing? And how is their talent acquisition team geared up to cater to those changes, right? And again, that's something as a decision-making point to see, okay, can we do this change on our own? Can we train our own teams? If yes, fine. If no, they might think about talking to an RPO company. The second thing is scalability. And what I mean by scalability is we're living in an environment where, there's so much uncertainty. With COVID also taught us that product launches in pharmaceuticals, for example, can happen so quickly. It really cut down the cycle of a product from research to market. And that's almost become the new norm. So, there might be, as a company, to really think about, is there scalability in the team, in the recruitment teams to cater to the business? That's something to think about. The third one is technology enablement, right? Again, even the tech companies, in fact, they make technology, but what about HR technology and TA technology? That is changing at a crazy pace. In 2023, we were talking about, just chat function and AI with that. And in 2025, we're talking about agentic AI. It's the pace of that change is massive. So again, that's something to think about. As an organization, if an organization thinks that they want to be living with the times and, want to be technology enabled in their own talent acquisition functions, that would be worthwhile talking to an RPO. And probably the fourth one is cost. Because with all of this comes fixed costs, or it could be a variable cost. And again, company like AMS, this is our bread and butter. We do this for multiple clients. We have over 100 enterprise clients across the world, and we can bring in learnings from those to everything that we do. So it's really a choice that a company can make. Wrapping up, I think it's really about scalability, it's about market competitiveness, it's about technology, and then there's cost.
That's great. I know we've partnered. I use the with AMS across different industries within Japan market, and whether that's retail, pharma, tech. You use the word enterprise, and you've also worked with companies that aren't as big as that as well in the Japan market. What would you say particularly about the Japan market, and partnering with an RPO that is unique that you find compared to the rest of, APAC that you work with?
So I think A couple of things. Just purely from a broad talent acquisition and recruitment perspective, people have jobs for life. That has been the norm in this market, right? It is a talent short market for demographic reasons as well. And it is a fairly agency driven market as well, at least in the past. That poses a couple of unique challenges for organizations. When companies are expanding, they find difficult to break, sort of loyalty of people to get the right talent. And as a result, that makes absolute sense. That's why exec search companies, executive search companies, as well as agencies tend to do so well in this market. And rates are probably the highest in the world as well. So that absolutely makes sense. I think the second thing that we also see is from a graduate hiring perspective, the talent that is coming in is very, very ambitious, very different, and there is a huge gap between that and the senior executives. So I find that quite a unique dynamic as well when we work with our clients that are hiring graduate trainees. We have to kind of really plan 3 years in advance to make sure that we can get the right people. And then thirdly, I mean, for in terms of processes, we always see that there is a lot of nuanced work that needs to happen in this particular market. LinkedIn is not the tool where candidates like to be. And, candidates like to be cajoled. They have to believe that if they're going to join this company, it makes sense for them, maybe not for another lifetime, but for a good number of years. And that means that the approach has to be processed, much more relationship orientated, and build that relationship slowly. So, for example, for one of our pharmaceutical clients, we do what we call sort of intake webinars or pipelining webinars. And candidates can join anonymously just to know about the company. Then they can decide whether they want to, be a part of the talent pipeline for the future or not. These are fairly entry-level roles, but even then. And those are things that we do in this market very, very differently compared to other markets. Also, typically, at AMS, we believe in finding the right candidate for the right job. And sometimes, there's a huge focus on external talent in this market, especially when there is massive growth. And we find that we do not tend to promise that we're going to turn that around quickly because we really need to build a relationship with the hiring manager community much more than any other part of Asia or even globally.
That's great. It's the other thing that's interesting, and we talked about technology, and we can talk more about that. In Japan, I've worked with big, for example, a big retail company, American retail company, and their technology and processes were still attracting talent and putting them on Excel spreadsheets. Now they have a database that's used globally, but in Japan they refuse to use it. And so they're losing so much data. And so one of my first things I tell clients is start a database right away. And sometimes that even seems like such a huge hurdle for companies. What do you see are, some recruitment technologies that in Japan that, companies can really start adding to their business that could really manifest into to help them recruit better?
Again, I think it's really interesting because the reason I find, companies outside of Asia, they look at Asia and they're like, oh, I don't understand this language, so I'm just gonna use Excel. So I do exactly the same, you know, educate our client to say, okay, can we tweak your systems to make them Asia ready? And what that means is, you know, whether it's a Workday or a SuccessFactors or Oracle HCM, just to make sure that they can integrate with the local job boards and the local way of communication in this particular market,
Right.
which is line, right? Like, so, you know, instead of in the US, people respond to text. If you're in Asia, you have to be either on WhatsApp or, depending on which market you are, in Japan, you have to be online.
That's right.
And I think the technology from a database perspective, from an ADS perspective, can be tweaked for the market, provided these tools are integrated and it becomes easy for the candidates to interact. Some of the technologies that I've seen, you know, I think I'm, yeah, I'm really looking forward to Workday being integrated with some of the local products in the market. Definitely, they're probably one of the best, and really want to understand the Asia market as well. SuccessFactors SAP is the other one. And I think from a new age technology perspective, there are you know, the CRMs like Phenom People and Smashfly that are increasingly, you know, increasing their investment to understand Japan, understand Asia. And I'm really looking forward to, you know, their some of their new launches in the upcoming months. From a perspective of really looking at the total talent and skill-based hiring, really interested to see what Gloat has to offer as well. It's sort of like an internal marketplace. And particularly for, you know, for market like Japan, which really has the talent. And sometimes it just would mean that the talent needs to be skilled in a different way. I think Gloat would be an interesting one. Probably the last one that comes to my mind, and I know that they don't yet have much presence in Japan, but looking forward to knowing what they're thinking about it, is Eightfold AI, which is, again, it's a stack rank. The way they look at sort of candidates is that they're stack ranked. Again, what that means in Japan, particularly where the language is important, that they will have to adapt and adopt to it. But again, AI makes that possible at a speed that we couldn't even think about 3, 4 years back. So really looking forward to, you know, how some of these tools are going to integrate all the investment that they've done in their own development and using AI to cater to the market, markets in Asia, particularly Japan, where, you know, it is a different market.
It used to be language was just so prohibitive for companies working in Japan, and now with
No,
AI, it's
yeah,
not. That's disappearing quite quickly on both sides for
exactly.
Japanese and for English or any other language. But
Exactly.
what other ways do you see AI playing a role in recruitment over the next kind of couple of years? And how's
So
that balanced with the human touch?
I think as humans, the human touch is still more most important. But what I really do foresee is the repetitive nature of tasks that recruiters have to do. For example, and I know that is very true in Japan, you have to probably send notes to or emails to 100 candidates to get one coffee. Imagine if all of that is automated with follow-ups, with, you know, and not just a follow-up, hey, have you got my email, but actually personalized follow-ups. And I know that that's already happening. We have what we call a scouting chatbot, for example, that really looks real, has a persona, and would go and contact recruiters. So I think that's at a really, really basic level. If a recruiter can get shot lists quicker, then they can focus a lot of their time on building the relationship and understanding the candidate, understanding the hiring manager. I think that's going to be really the basic thing. That's actually, it's already happening, but the scale of that is going to further accelerate, definitely. I think the second thing with the advent of AI is the ability to use data. And again, it's not just having data, but also the ability to demystify what that data is saying. And what that means is, you might as a recruiter might be able to take those reports and really say, what does that mean? Being able to almost do an exec summary of a 10-page report into 5 lines, things like that, which really enhances the human experience, is where I think the use of technology is going to be great. And probably the third one that I definitely think it's going to be not too far in the in our future is the use of agents. So what that means is like doing interview scheduling, doing anything that's administrative is just going to be passed on either to an agent or with technology. A lot of self-service, I think, is going to also come in, which again, that means that we have things in our own hands rather than relying on someone. We can do things on our own, and I do think that that definitely enhances the human experience. I don't think that it's going to be anything else but better, and we cannot undermine the importance of human experience, particularly in a job situation, right? I'm not going to get a job without knowing you. And I don't think that's going to change.
It's interesting listening to you speak because I think in some ways in Japan, some people would much rather deal with a chatbot than a human for their job search. And I personally, some chatbots are better than a lot of recruiters I've dealt with. So it can work both ways. What about, let's shift gears because you have just so much experience at APAC. Let's talk about D&I. I think diversity strategies are important. And then it needs to go beyond just token hires, but needs to start
Absolutely.
making real impact. And I think in Japan, we're still seeing a lot of tokenism, whether Europe says, we need to hire more men directors that are women versus, hiring the right person.
Right.
Because that can be a challenge also for the talent pool, just limiting it that way. But then also, how can we build up that talent pool so that there are more opportunities for everybody? And how do you see, Asia changing and specifically around Japan as well, aligning with those kind of business ideas and business successes?
Yeah, I think for one, I hope we don't go the US way across
Yeah,
Asia.
it's two of us.
The beauty of Asia as such is we are diverse just by nature. And I feel that Asian societies, anyways, are much more inclusive. So, I'm a big believer of D&I as a part of a DNA of the organization. And I still think that that's where it needs to be. Rest everything is tokenism. And as it relates to that, for me, it is inclusion first, equity second, and diversity comes as a result of those two. And as I talk to our clients, I have not heard anyone who is sort of, starting to think about it differently, because the reality is we are in a talent short market. We're also in a changing environment, which means, particularly from a neurodiversity perspective, for example, it just makes the right sense, first of all, to make sure that people of all different, caste, creed, LGBT personality, neurodiversity, gender, everything. They can all come together and have the right opportunity because the talent pools are small, and we just need the right talent for the right job. So from that perspective, I think that's really important. And I do think at least most of the clients that we work with are not looking at really shifting that. In fact, they're looking at how can they make their own tech processes a lot more inclusive. And, you know, and tech, when I say tech process, I mean recruitment using tech much more inclusive. So I think that's because that's a big scare, right? That if AI is taught to be build with the bias, that it might be choosing candidates with that bias in mind. And I think most of our clients are really making sure that that they keep that front and center of their D&I strategy. At AMS, we have a ethical AI board, which the primary, you know, reason why we established that is to ensure that inclusion stays front and center of, you know, how we develop processes. We are also, you know, a big believer in equity as well. And like I said, I think for me personally, it has to be in that order.
That's great.
And again, you know, it's the business imperative. That's the front and center of it. It's not something that looks good, that it is tokenism. You need it because otherwise we can't find the right talent.
Yeah, in Japan, it's interesting because sometimes right talent does either just doesn't exist, with right being what the hiring managers think they need, which
Exactly.
is, you know, a 40-year-old who's gone off and studied overseas in a Western company and has come back and they want to work in their company, which chances are they probably don't. But they're not including, you know, thinking about in Japan specifically, older
Older
candidates,
people,
which
absolutely.
and a lot of these companies are still maintaining this kind of 60-year-old retirement age, which is really
Right.
hindering them. The companies that are 65 aren't looking at the opportunity to hire those that are in their late 50s, that those employees could stay another 5, 6, 7 years, which is probably longer than the people they had before. And
Right.
it's a real opportunity loss. So I think in Japan, I feel like there's a DEI. There's an inclusion of, you know, kind of age that we've even forgot.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You are so right. And again, you know, there are organizations, I call them like trailblazing organizations, that do start to think about that. So let's go beyond the 65. Because the reality is life expectancy has gone up drastically across the world, and particularly in Japan. And each one of us, we're going to be able to have multiple careers. I don't think I'm ready to retire at 65. So again, you know, that's something to really think about. Yeah. It can call in for a podcast in itself, David, don't you think so?
Well, we'll be around long enough to do that, so that's good. What about remote work's a big thing nowadays as well. I see a lot of companies wanting employees to come back into the office full time. I had lunch today with a nice American company that they're in the office 5 days a week,
Yeah.
and as a recruiter, I think, wow, that must be so difficult to recruit for because candidates are looking at the flip side of that, and working parents want the flip side of that, and they want the flexibility and having, you know, aging relatives, and it just
Absolutely.
seems and it just seems to go against the grain of the DEI we were just talking about. How do you see in APAC the hybrid remote work shaping up right now?
Again, I think different companies are taking a different approach. At AMS, we truly believe in hybrid and we give the choice to our people. However, for the first time actually in our own history, we are asking for employees to come back just once in 15 days. And that's coming from a place of, what our engagement scores are telling us, that belonging is at its all-time low. And I think this is true for all countries, but in particular in Japan, our belonging scores have been drastically coming down from pre-COVID to now. And when we start to do and talk to, in focus groups, talk to our employees, they feel like they don't have the connect. And that's, sort of to your point earlier, it's almost the flip side of being 100% virtual. So as a company, we've taken that approach only one time in 15 days, where we bring people together. It's always with a targeted piece around, there's going to be a team meeting. They will have that connect. They will have an opportunity to get to know their colleagues better, and really do that. But otherwise, I mean, from my perspective, thinking about productivity, efficiency, and the fact that we have been able to make remote work successful, people have tasted that, how it looks like. So I don't think that it is possible for us to ever go back to 100% in the office. I bet, there are companies who do take that approach. And
What
does
do you
it?
see the trend in the market though? In Asia, what do you see the trend?
I think it's really mixed. It is more the philosophy of the company. For example, investment banks tend to be a lot more stricter. They tend to, go 3 days upwards, need to be in office, right? Like, I think that's what we see. In the retail environment, people have never had a choice. They need that time with the customer. So it's almost the other way around. But in companies where people can work remotely, I think they should be allowed to work remotely. So from my perspective, I don't see a real trend. However, I think most companies are wanting some level of let's get together to build that connection. And what that exactly is, I think really varies. So unfortunately, I don't see it, see any trends per se in, oh, let's all come back to work. I mean, of course, the real estate lobby would love that,
Yep.
right? But I don't think that that's the direction that we're heading. It's
Interesting.
definitely hybrid.
Okay. And kind of closing thoughts, what are you thinking, about the future of recruitment in APAC now? What excites you?
I think the exciting part about Asia Pacific, Japan very much, is this whole, different and diverse nature of our countries, of the languages that we speak. And that's really in being human is it's all about, right? For me, that's why recruitment in Asia is not boring. There's always more to do. On a more serious note, I think skill-based hiring is here to stay as well. And what that means is not just hiring and recruiting for jobs, but purely for skills. I think the second thing from a talent perspective is what I call cognitive agility. So really making sure that we are hiring people with the skill that is on top of the mind is the ability to learn rather and the ability to adopt. That's why I say, cognitive agility. And the third thing probably for this particular market is I do see a lot more nationalization across countries. Which means, this whole during COVID, people were talking about you can work from anywhere, global talent, all of that. I think that's going to sort of die down a little bit. It's going to be more, yeah, if you're in Japan, you need a Japanese person or at least somebody who understands that skill. Notwithstanding, the language part has become easier, but the cultural element and, the ability to change and adapt for that market continues to be important. And I do see that that's going to be a an ongoing trend.
Yeah, you're spot on that, I think. That's great, Rupal. Thank you so much for spending time and sharing your insights about the market. I appreciate it. It's been a delight to
Thank you,
speak with you.
David. Thank you. You're amazing. Thank you for inviting me here, and I really look forward to many more conversations.
Well, thank you. So we'll have contact details for Rup and how you can reach out to AMS. I really recommend that if you're growing, if you're looking at processes, if you need to really educate your staff about what's going on and how to grow your market, that you reach out to AMS, talk to Rup, talk to her team in Japan, and really see what you can do, because I think the possibilities are exceptional and it really will help companies be able to grow. So I hope people will reach out to you, Roop, to discuss this.
I really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Thank you.